Senate Committee on Business and Consumer Affairs, Monday, May 2, 1983, at 3 p.m. in hearing room B at the Capitol Building. This is a public hearing on Senate Bill 626 relating to noise pollution and House Bill 2093 with House amendments relating to tax service licensing.
Consumers Affairs will come to order. Committee assistant will know the members who are present and the ones who are absent are excused. Not having a quorum, we are going to start with subcommittee hearing on Senate Bill 626. And Marcia, will you go over the bill with the committee members, please?
Yes, Senate Bill 626 addresses the problem of excessive noise levels at indoor musical performances. There are four sections to the bill. The first section establishes the requirement that the Environmental Quality Commission set the noise emission levels for indoor public musical performances, both live and recorded. Section 2 simply adds sections 3 and 4. Section 3 establishes the right of the director of the Department of Environmental Quality to seek a 30-day injunction against a sponsor of a musical performance which has been found to be in violation of the noise emission level and which has been previously fined for that violation. Section 4 specifies the fines for the violation of the noise emission level. The sponsor of a performance may be fined up to $100 for the first violation. After that, the sponsor is liable to the injunction provisions, and the person giving the performance may be fined up to $100 for the first violation and up to $500 for second and subsequent violations.
Thank you, Marcia. Senator Wyers.
Thank you, Senator Yee, Madam Chairperson. I put this bill in at the request of Mr. Richard Roy, who's here today, and with him is Dr. Jack Vernon and Jim Eklund. The latter two of those people are with a foundation that's dedicated to research and treatment of problems of the ear. Dr. Vernon has brought added dignity to the medical community and to Oregon by developing some innovative techniques of dealing with people that have ringing in their ears, sometimes called tinnitus.
Tight collars sometimes.
tight collars. The institute that Dr. Vernon and Mr. Eklund are with is dedicated to helping find more things to do to help people that are hard of hearing, which there are more people that are hard of hearing than have many of the other major health problems put together. I'm particularly interested in this because there's a great deal of hard of hearing problem in my family, and I know that from working with my father in his latter years that's likely to be the thing that will end my working days, or at least severely limit them first if I otherwise take good care of myself. And so I'm delighted to try and encourage the committee any consideration they can give to this bill. In talking about it with several people, it seems to me that if the committee is interested in this concept of having the Department of Environmental Quality set a standard above which music could be harmful, that we perhaps should consider not going much beyond that, and maybe not have penalties, and not have, certainly not have permits required. I think all the restaurants and music places need is another permit they have to fill out every time they were going to have some music, some live music. But I think if we could ask the Department of Environmental Quality to help us just set a standard which could be the public could be educated about, and then if a person came into a place where they thought they were going to be able to talk with somebody and the music was very loud and the people would have something to approach the owner or the manager of the establishment about, that would probably leave the situation where most of the people or the majority of the people wanted to have the music very loud. It would probably leave that uncontrolled, but it would, so you might say that would leave the bill as only a half a loaf, but it would leave us without a fiscal impact, much of any fiscal impact, which we all know is fatal to a bill this session. And it would leave us without a lot of new government regulation that with businesses already weighted down with that. But it would give us a standard. It would give something for people to encourage the schools to talk about, and it would give people a jumping off point for a discussion if they came into an establishment where it seemed to them the music was louder than it needed to be for the majority of the people who were there. That's perhaps, some might say that would water the bill down quite a bit, but I think it would give us additional impetus to have something. And one of the things that's been brought up I hope I'm not being too repetitious, Madam Chair, but one of the things that's been brought up is that now there are many claims being made by workers in Oregon against their employer for hearing problems. And if they're actually indeed getting that hearing problem somewhere else, that ends up being an impact on the employer through their compensation insurance that should not be there. And we all know that workers' compensation rates can be a detriment in attracting and keeping business in Oregon. So I think this bill may have some economic impact that wouldn't be readily seen. If the committee is interested, I would be glad to try and to work with the committee administrator and legislative council to prepare amendments if you're interested in pursuing the bill at all. I appreciate very much your hearing from me today. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Senator Wise? Senator Ripper?
Jim, you know, is the on generation going to think we're attacking them because we're now saying their music's too loud? We've been saying that for a long time.
I think
probably the reaction is going to be from that group of young people.
I think probably some people would say we're old fogey dogies. Yeah, and I, you
know, we're taking away their wood stoves, and now we're going to take away their music. And
I think that probably somebody might say that, but probably the people who'd say it loudest aren't voting very much these days. And those of us that have crossed the bar and now notice when our ears are being destroyed would probably feel that it was a nice step in the right direction if we didn't have a lot of government regulation in it. That would just be my thing.
Well, we appreciate your bringing this issue to our attention. I think an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So this is a good issue we should take a good look at.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Richard Roy, do you want to come up with Dr. Vernon together? Welcome to the committee, and will you identify yourself, please?
Thank you. I'm Dick Roy.
I'm Jack Vernon.
I called the Senator Wire to have this bill introduced just because of a personal interest I have in this. I have three teenage children myself. I'm a scoutmaster, and I'm also the coach of the Wilson High School chess team. In all three of those capacities, I have contact with a lot of teenage kids. And the one thing I've noticed recently is that a lot of them talk about the loudness of the music when they go to concerts. There are places in Portland, for example, that cater only to 16 to 21-year-old kids. They talk about coming out of these places with ringing in their ears. And it occurred to me that the state of Oregon is suffering a great deal, both monetarily and in terms of the future lives of our children, very unnecessarily, and it's because of this excessive noise. All of us know people who have suffered a hearing loss, and it's a very isolating thing to have your hearing diminished. It takes you away from your relatives, it takes you away from your work. It's really a very costly thing in a personal sense. It's also very costly to all of us in terms of keeping care of people who have impaired hearing. There are costs to those people themselves, there are costs to employers, and really the cost of the state is quite excessive. And in my own view, all of this is unnecessary as it relates to music. For those of us who grew up before amplification, we like to dance, we like to go out. We could talk to people when we were at dances. Today, that's not the case. When my kids come out of I won't name the place, but when they come out of the 16 to 21 year old club in Portland, their ears are ringing. The insidious thing about this is that, and Dr. Vernon will explain this technically much better than I can, is that hearing loss is permanent and it's cumulative. And so that as you're losing your hearing, particularly in the higher frequencies, you're not aware of it. You become aware of it when it's too late. And if those kids knew the future damage to their hearing, of course they wouldn't go in today, but they just can't think that far off in the future. In my testimony today, I've included for you an article out of a recent Northwest magazine for the Oregonian, and I just quote one statistic from that. In the in an entering class of 1,410 college freshmen, more than 60% had some hearing loss, and so that means that those freshmen in college are now 45 or 50 years old as far as their hearing is concerned. And of course, because that's been accelerated, then by the time they're 45 or 50, they'll have severe hearing losses. I'd like to now defer to Dr. Vernon, who's quoted in that article, to talk more about the technical side of it.
Dr. Vernon.
Senator Yee and members of the committee, I am here to testify in support of Senate Bill 626. I believe you have before you the evidence that I wish to submit. And some of this is repetitious, but bear with me. Senator Yee, you have already stolen my thunder when you said an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. It's trying to do something for these people that has made me concerned. Loud sounds are well known for their ability to permanently destroy hearing. There's no recovery from that, nor is there any real way to replace it. However, the destruction occurs in a very insidious manner. The destructive process is not uniform across all of our hearing ability, but rather starts at the upper frequencies, well above those that we need to either understand speech or music. And then as the accumulative process continues, that damage moves down into the concerned areas. So you can see why many, many people, many especially young people, have suffered a great deal of hearing loss and have never realized it. It's one of those interesting things about what nature has done to the hearing mechanism. Any sound, then, if loud enough, can damage the inner ear, no matter what kind of sound. And Senator Ripper, I think that's the point. It's loud. It's not that we object to the quality, it's the quantity only that we object to. 20 years ago, Dr. David Lipscomb at the University of Tennessee found that only 5% of the incoming freshmen had any measurable hearing loss at all. Today, the entering class, as still measured by Dr. Lipscomb, shows a loss of 65% of the entering freshmen have some measurable hearing loss. Now, I don't think that the people in Tennessee are weaker than Oregonians, although sometimes I suspect that's true. Not all people are affected equally. There are some people who have very tough ears and some who have very tender ears, just like you may recall the old phrase about the boxer who has the glass jaw and the one who does not. And the same thing is true of ears. Some ears are easily destroyed. Some ears are very resistant to this kind of destruction. Thus, the fact that one person in a certain kind of loud sound situation does not suffer doesn't mean that that's a safe situation for everyone. There are various items besides loud sound which can destroy hearing. Some medicines have that side effect. These are good medicines. I'm not talking about exotic drugs. I'm talking about good drugs. And there can be an interaction between these and the sound, where neither one alone might have created a problem. Together in concert, they do. They often do. For some people, not all people, exposure to loud sounds produces this tinnitus to which Dick has already referred. That is a ringing in the ringing in the ears when there is actually no sound present. The presence of tinnitus, whether temporary or permanent, means that the ears have been damaged. For some people, unfortunately many people, tinnitus can become severe and persist as a terrible torment, even when all hearing is lost. Some of the most tragic people we see are those who can't hear anything except the torment that's driving them crazy. The federal regulations for industry require that even with earplugs or ear defenders, one may work only 4 hours out of every 24 hours in a 95 dB environment, or 2 hours out if there's 100 dB, or 1 hour if there's 105, or half an hour if there's 110, or 15 minutes if there's 115 dB. Most rock music is played between 102 and 116 dB. The effect of noise-induced hearing loss are cumulative, so the damage spreads more and more down into the frequencies of concern that are needed for the spoken word or to understand speech. The aim of legislation against production of damagingly loud music in public places is, I think, not a restraint of trade, but it is a restraint of the destruction of hearing in our youth. There are many health regulations concerning the public distribution of food and drink. There should be the same kind of consideration for the health of hearing, one of our most precious commodities. The cost in terms of productivity alone due to faulty and inadequate hearing in our younger generation can become so great as to be beyond estimation. It is not just the youth of America. We seem to have exported this threat to every nation of the world. Recently, however, Japan has imported it back to us. They have sent us a new fad, the Sony Walkman, which is capable of putting out 116 dB under earphones clamped to the head. One nightclub in Portland gives out earplugs at the door. How much more simple it would be to simply turn the intensity level of the music down. One of the attractions of loud music, I'm not sure that anyone knows, but I'd like to make some guesses. First, it's the in thing. And like most fads, it doesn't require a reason. The listener is jolted by excessive secretion of adrenaline, which normally keys us up to do battle or to flee. It's an emotional reaction, which is part of our innate biological makeup. Rapt attention to music becomes automatic, since a person cannot have lapse of listening at those intensity levels. It helps establish the gap that one can then use to emphasize the existence of the generation gap. Interestingly enough, there's always been a generation gap over the subject of music. Even when composers like Beethoven first came on the scene, they were considered too modern, or too informal, or non-classical. State regulation is needed in those situations where the unsuspecting public can suffer harm. Food and Drug Administration undertakes responsibility to ensure safety as well as efficacy of the medicines we consume. FDA regulations are not restraint of trade. They are for the protection of the public, and the cost is enormous. For example, under present standards, to get one drug from the day of conception through the FDA procedures cost in excess of $1 million, and yet no one would have it otherwise. I feel that the intent of SB 626 is to protect the public, a public that is very often ignorant of the fact that loud noises can produce hearing losses, and the major problem with loud rock music of today is that it is most likely going to prevent our present generation from enjoying the music of tomorrow. I thank you for the opportunity to be with you today, and I hope that I can provide information at any time should you so require.
Thank you, Dr. Vernon. How do you think the DEQ can go about establishing certain levels that would be harmful to human ears?
Well, these have really pretty well been worked out as far as time and intensity trade-offs are concerned for the OSHA regulations. And one could model after that pattern if you wanted to set it as a regulatory thing. Much of industry today has to conform to those regulations, or else they're culpable.
I'd like to cite one example where I think the DEQ could, through the regulatory process, establish standards. And I can cite one example from last summer in Senator Hannon's district. When I was in Ashland to see the plays, I thought that there was a rock band in the parking lot of my motel, which happened to be about 2 blocks from the school. And I went out there in the middle of the night and saw that nothing was there. And finally, I chased the source of the noise down. It happened to be at the college. And I went in the place, and it was really loud enough so that it was painful to me to locate the manager. And I told him, I said, you know, it's disturbing me 2 blocks away, and I'm sure that this is harming the health of those here. And he said, well, there's really nothing I can do about it. Now, in that particular instance where you have a state institution saying there's nothing they can do about it, if there are DEQ regulations saying the noise level should be maintained at such and such a level, then the voluntary compliance would be something that would be extremely helpful. Also, in the educational process, children could become aware that this is harmful, because there would be a state law saying that this is the level that music should be in an enclosed space.
Mr. Roy, do you think this is enforceable? Do you mean in the police department they can have devices where they can test the decibel level of the music and therefore say you are above the standards of the state?
I think it could be. I think you could structure this in a number of ways. From my standpoint, the essential thing is to have the DEQ with the ability to set the regulation. Then, if you want enforcement, of course, you could have a more elaborate scheme, but I think that at least that first step is an extremely important one. Dr. Vernon can comment on the type of a mechanism required to measure it.
Now, that's easy, but I'm not sure that's the way you want to do it. I agree with this notion of putting something on the books that says a basis for educational programs, a basis for self-information, and general making the public more aware of what the problems are. Like a lot of people, I resent regulation, and I'm not sure that you want to add yet another regulation, take away another thing, as Senator Ripper says. But you've got to start somewhere. And certainly if one was intent on serving tomaine food in their tavern, they could probably get away with it for a long time. But that seems to me not the intent of this kind of thing.
Thank you, Randy.
I think the DEQ could do it. I guess we got somebody coming from DEQ, don't we? They spend
yes,
a lot of time now
sure.
buzzing all around the state at racetracks, and there aren't very darn many. And they're also talking about measuring trucks, and one of their big programs in their noise now is airplanes. And I don't think airplanes are half as bad as this, and I just wonder if they don't have the ability to do this. That's the only, they ought to have it if they don't, because they are spending a lot of time on things that are less noisy.
Well, I obviously can't speak to them, Senator Ripper, but I am impressed with the number of people I've seen in our clinic who are sort of rugged individualists who don't really care whether they talk to you or not. But they always say, if anybody had ever told me I was going to wind up with this ringing in my head, I would have protected myself, or I would have stayed away from that sound had I known. And I think we are culpable when we don't make it available knowledge to them.
I agree with you.
Senator Timms?
Madam Chairperson, well, I certainly agree with the premise that we need knowledge. I think that's where this bill should be. I know with my children, they all, you know, have the music turned up, and I do not permit it. I think the first place, you have to educate the people at home that they better not allow their children to plug in. Of course, they have the ones now you can plug in, you don't know how loud it is, but I think it's an education system that we need to get in place, and I don't know who, this is not education completely, this prohibits. The first word of the summary, of course, prohibits musical performance or what have you, but I think before we pass laws, that the first thing you have to do is educate the populace about the what's out there and what it's doing to them, and I don't think we've done that.
No, that's quite true. We have not. I'm not sure which of those comes first. I noticed you said, for example, that your children turn theirs up, but you don't allow it. That seems to be a contradiction of terms.
Well, when they stick it in their ear, you don't know how loud it is.
I
do not allow them to do it within the home.
I suspect that it's as soon as you walk out the door, something else happens, no matter how good your control is. And so they, we do need an education program very badly. But you need something that has some authority behind it that says to the school system, become concerned about this problem.
Well, doctor, as a new politician, I disagree with that. I think the first thing you have to do is educate the public. Otherwise, you antagonize the public. Anytime government starts telling the public what to do, they get mad. And I think the populace right now is close to the breaking point anyway. And I think that before we can get people to do things, we have to educate them. And then maybe, possibly, if we can't get it done that way, then do it with government regulations.
Well, one thing I would say on this, Senator Timms, when I was growing up in Baker, we used to go out to the Grange Hall, Missouri Flat Grange Hall, and dance every Saturday night. And we could talk, and we had a good time. That was the things kids did then. The problem you have now is that the thing that's available to kids is amplified music. And that's what those kids go to. And you missed part of my testimony. I have three teenagers. I'm a scout master. I have a chess team from high school. I spend a lot of time with kids, but you cannot tell those kids that what you're doing now is going to cause your life 20 years from now to be isolated. It's going to cause you to be less productive at work and so forth. They just will not listen to that. And I've made a pretty great attempt with a large, large number because I have almost daily contact with them. It's an in thing to do to go and get your ears blasted.
And I would also say this is addressed to not just the school-aged kid, but think of the employees who do 8 hours of work in these places, who need this job, who have to be there, and they too are having their ears decimated.
But you say this is protected under federal regulation.
Not
the present
not this. It is if you work in a mill, but not in a public.
Yeah, there's something like what
working condition.
500 must be 500 employees or more before it comes under that kind of control.
Oh, does it have to be 500 or more?
I think that's right. Please don't quote me on that. But it has to be within the industry so that it is of a larger organization. What happens to employees of these other places? There's no regulation now protecting them from excessive sound.
No protection for the customer either. There's a couple places I don't go eat anymore because they drive you out and you complain to the management. And that doesn't mean anything at all.
Why don't you make a note to see if employment under 500 are protected under federal regulations as far as noise level is concerned? Any other questions? If not, thank you very much, Dr. Burnham. We have Mr. Stan Biles from Department of Environmental Quality.
Wait until the 1st of July.
Mr. Biles, I just saw you this morning.
Here we are again.
Agriculture Committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stan Biles. I'm assistant to the Director of the Department of Environmental Quality. The department has not historically regulated or became overly involved in the monitoring of indoor air pollution. That's been, I suppose, for a variety of reasons that I'll get to, but the most important one, I think, is that our efforts have concentrated on what we'd call the involuntary exposure to air, to noise pollution. The factory across the street from a residence. Person has no option. They experience it, worst case, 24 hours a day. Senator Ripper made reference to the airport situation. Very similar. Ongoing effort at Portland International Airport to try to change some of the flight patterns. Again, homes have no choice. They're exposed to that noise. They either move or they endure it. So our efforts there, similar to our efforts in other pollution arenas, have concentrated on, just by their very nature, the out-of-doors pollution, be it air pollution or water pollution or, in this case, noise pollution. But one of the other reasons that we have not been aggressive in monitoring musical performance or noise levels in a variety of other areas that we're not monitoring them in has, quite frankly, been the level of resources that we've got. Our noise program currently has two FTE in it, two positions to run the current noise program and administer the statutes statewide. It's taken the brunt of recent budget cuts in the department. Our high was probably five positions to administer the program statewide a few years ago. We're now down to two. The Ways and Means Committee has suggested the addition of one position for a duration of 2 years to facilitate the transition of the noise program from the state level to local levels, to encourage local cities and counties to adopt their own ordinances and to enforce those ordinances rather than having it an emphasis upon the state DEQ to run the programs. So I suppose those factors have merged together that have not prompted us to become overly aggressive in this area. That's not to say that we don't think it's a problem. We do feel there's a problem there. There have been studies. There was an excellent recent PBS documentary on noise damage caused by rock and roll music, both to the musicians as well as to the audience. So I think there's pretty well good documentation that a problem exists. And then comes the question as to how best to address that problem. We think in looking at the bill, taking the regulatory aspect, it would require some unique approaches by the department that we haven't